Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Stoma for Life. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. I'm here to explore the realities of living with a chronic health condition in this episode, sharing an inspiring story and providing practical insights to empower and to inform you. Now, before I start, I want to give a heartfelt thank you for all the incredible feedback I've received about the shows throughout my social media. Your support and messages mean the absolute world to me. If you're not already following me, then kindly do so by using the handle Stoma for Life. That's S-T-O-M-A, digit 4, L-I-F-E, on Instagram, on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Facebook, to join the conversation and to stay in the loop and, yeah, just to follow me. So we're talking IBD today. Now, what is IBD, or inflammatory bowel disease? Now, this is often used as an umbrella term for chronic inflammatory conditions that affect the digestive tract. There are two common types. The one is Crohn's disease and the other one is ulcerative colitis. Now, Crohn's disease can impact any part of the gastrointestinal tract from the mouth to the anus, often causing inflammation deep within the bowel walls. And ulcerative colitis targets the colon and rectum, causing inflammation and ulcers in the innermost lining of the colon. Both conditions are characterized by cycles of flare-ups when symptoms are active and remission when symptoms subside. Now, before I started the show, I thought IBD, IBS, that's all the same thing. But no, it isn't. So let's just clear up the misconceptions around those terms. Many confuse IBD with IBS. Now, IBS is irritable bowel syndrome. So here are the two differences. IBD is an autoimmune disease that involves chronic inflammation and can lead to severe complications like bowel obstructions, fistulas, and increased risks of colon cancer. On the other hand, IBS is a functional gastrointestinal disorder that affects gut-brain interactions but does not cause inflammation or structural damage. In short, IBD is a chronic, potentially life-altering disease that requires medical intervention, while IBS is generally less severe and often managed with lifestyle changes. Now, what does living with IBD entail? Managing IBD means navigating symptoms and challenges like, well, if you're having a flare-up, those can be severe, sometimes with abdominal pain, diarrhea, fatigue, weight loss, and blood in the stool. It can also have long-term impacts, like with nutrient malabsorptions, anemia, and the emotional toll of chronic illness. And you can also get complications like bowel obstructions, fistulas, and an increased risk of colorectal cancer. Now, IBD isn't just a physical condition. It touches every aspect of your life. Unpredictability. Flare-ups can disrupt routines and plans at a moment's notice. Your mental health, anxiety, depression, and stress are common due to the physical and social challenges of this condition. And there's also a social stigma. Many with IBD hesitate to discuss their condition, fearing misunderstanding or embarrassment. Now, especially because of all those that I've just mentioned, I'm particularly thrilled to welcome Amber Tresca to the show. Amber is a health advocate, a writer, a podcaster, and the creator of About IBD. Her personal journey with IBD was fueled by her passion for supporting those living with chronic illnesses. Amber is a prominent voice in the IBD community, covering topics such as managing symptoms and treatments, coping with emotional and mental challenges, and advocating for patients' rights and inclusivity in healthcare. Amber's commitment to diversity and representation in the chronic illness space is unmatched. She has pushed for better inclusion in awareness campaigns, clinical trials, and pharmaceutical marketing, all while advocating research into women's health in IBD for adolescents to menopause. Now, in today's conversation, Amber will share her personal story, highlight the actionable tips for navigating life with IBD, and explore how we can all advocate for better awareness and inclusivity in healthcare. So don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life, where today we're talking about all things IBD. Welcome back to Stoma for Life, where today we are talking about all things IBD. I'm truly honored to introduce today's guest, Amber Treska, the creator of About IBD. Amber is a passionate advocate for the IBD community, using her personal experience with chronic illness to educate, empower, and inspire others. As a writer, podcaster, and speaker, Amber delves into the complexities of life with IBD, covering everything from managing symptoms and treatments to navigating emotional challenges and advocating for better healthcare practices. Her dedication to fostering diversity and inclusion within the chronic illness space has made her a vital voice in raising awareness and improving representation. Amber's work doesn't just stop at advocacy. She also challenges the status quo, pushing for more research into women's health issues related to IBD and creating platforms where everybody's story can be heard. Today, Amber joins me to share her journey, insights, and actionable advice for living with IBD while promoting inclusivity and understanding. Welcome to the show, Amber Treska. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to speak to you.
I thought it is absolutely crucial and important to have a whole show dedicated on IBD. And well, you came up because you yourself are not just a sufferer, but you're an extremely outspoken advocate on the subject. So perhaps you can take us back on how all of this came about and how it started.
Oh, gosh, it's funny because whenever someone asks me that question, which is often, and I have to say, well, I sort of fell backwards into everything. It wasn't something that I set out to do, career or otherwise. But I was diagnosed in the long ago. So I was diagnosed in 1989 with ulcerative colitis. Mm-hmm. And you know, we didn't know anything then. We know so much more now. And of course, the internet is helpful in so many ways, but had never heard of IBD, knew nothing about it. And I was 16. So I was also dealing with, you know, literally being a child and trying to figure everything out. And when I was 26, that was when I had J-pouch surgery. And that sort of began my journey into, okay, I really kind of was going along here not being my own best advocate and not being very educated in regards to IBD and needing surgery for my ulcerative colitis really turned around my perspective. And I realized that I needed to take a greater role in my own health. And then that sort of dovetailed with an opportunity that literally came across my desk in the year 2000, to write for a brand new burgeoning website that was covering a lot of different topics and also health. And I applied to be their IBD expert. It's a little, it feels a little funny to say that, but I did and was accepted. And that began my writing career, specifically in health. And then after that, yeah, people just come knocking. I mean, I suppose, you know, just as you found me once I started sharing my journey and then also trying to help educate patients and care partners, and then also, you know, physicians about what it is like to live with an IBD, that's when a lot of other things started happening and more opportunities came along. And today I do lots of work, both I do political work to trying to help advance the cause of people who live with chronic illness, make sure that there's legislation that supports their needs. I do speaking events. I hung my own shingle out and started my blog about IBD. And then I decided to start a podcast because why not? And now more than 160 episodes later, I'm still doing that. So it wasn't intentional at all. I'm intentional about it now, but it wasn't intentional in the beginning. And I'm so grateful that I have the support of the community behind me.
Yeah. Now let's just go right back to the beginning, because you said this was done, or this was discovered in the 80s when you were a teenager yourself. Now, yeah. I'm thinking back of my own teenage years when, I mean, you are sort of on the verge of adulthood and you are then having to struggle with a chronic illness. And I can just imagine the mental aspect of it must be quite horrific. Perhaps you can just touch on that, because I know that a lot of young people are struggling with this before they actually get diagnosed for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because all of the full force of what happens in your teenage years when you're diagnosed with a chronic illness, at the time, you're literally just dealing with it. You know, you're dealing with the next thing that comes along. Hospitalizations, medications, all of a sudden you're dealing with physicians and with, you know, IBD, bowel cancer, all of that. You're 16 years old and you have a lot of people, you know, accessing parts of your body that you're not used to yet. And all of that you are dealing with in the moment, and it is really only years later, and I think maybe even for me, decades later, that you realize the full impact of it all. And first of all, I was out of school a lot. You know, I was in high school, and coping with that, with everything from, you know, socially, with my grades, with my teachers, that was a lot, you know, and it didn't necessarily go really well, to, you know, to be frank. You know, my family was dealing with it the best that they could, but chronic illness was not understood in the same way that it is today, and specifically IBD. I don't remember ever really telling anybody what I was dealing with, outside of like my closest friends, and I'm talking about like the people that would visit you in the hospital, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of those folks, I don't remember ever telling anybody with what I was dealing with. Mm-hmm. So keeping it very private and trying to literally keep my grades up, get through school, and then get through college, all the while dealing with the symptoms of IBD, because they were not, in for myself, they were never really fully controlled. Mm-hmm. At that time, we had very few medication options. There are so many more options today. And what we had available really wasn't working very well for me, but there wasn't a lot else to do at that point. So it was dealing with the fatigue, with the constant diarrhea, things like that. And then trying to just keep everything moving. But I did manage to, you know, graduate high school with honors. I made it through college, not with honors, but I did graduate. I do have my Bachelor of Science, and then enter into the workforce. And it's just a lot. And I don't know what it's like to go through those years without a chronic illness. So I can't, so it's like hard for me to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
But I will say that things are vastly improved in the treatment landscape today. So that young people who are diagnosed today have a much better options and can get themselves into, with the help of their physicians, can get themselves into remission, and they have a much better outlook on everything as far as transitioning into adulthood with, hopefully, I always say people should have a little bit of adversity in their life. You know, I think it's good. I think it builds character, but maybe not as much as I had. So, you know, hopefully this is where we're at with IBD treatment, and that people are finding more help and more care and better options as they navigate the journey from teenager into young adulthood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you certainly had to suffer in silence in those
Yeah.
years. And now I think, as you've already mentioned, with the onset of the internet, there is so much more, first of all, information out there for those suffering. And also, it's become more common to speak about your mental health or about a chronic illness. There's no need for us to shy away from those topics anymore. It's become more, I'd say, mainstream to talk about it. So I think a lot has been done, and I think that definitely qualifies you for one of the best advocates for it, because you've dealt with it for most of your life and you've seen the improvement in the healthcare system and in society as well.
Yeah, and sometimes I feel it feels a little funny. There's the expression, kids get off my lawn, like older people might say. So I feel a little bit like that sometimes, because being diagnosed in the pre-biologic age, I think gives me a different perspective. And also, and for your listeners, specifically in the United States, when I was diagnosed, there weren't a lot of protections in place for people that lived with chronic illness. And of course, we have a commercial healthcare insurance system. So one of the things that also kept me silent publicly, in so much as there was, the ability to be public back when I was diagnosed, until, social media, that you could be denied care if you had what was called a pre-existing condition. So being diagnosed young like that, I felt that I needed to watch out for myself in that way and rather keep it quiet. We have better legislation in the United States now. I'm not saying that it goes perfectly or that people don't do things that they're not supposed to, but it was a real worry in the beginning talking about a chronic illness, because you could be denied care. An employer might look you up on a search engine, find out that you were living with a disease that's not well understood, incredibly stigmatized, and then decide that they wouldn't want to call you in for an interview, things like that. So, and this, I think it is still a consideration today. So it is something that I try to bring attention to and mention to people before you start that Instagram account. Make sure that you know what you're getting into, and that it can potentially cause problems for you. But the stigma of it, people not understanding what it was and saying things to you like, you don't look like you're sick, you're too young to be sick, etc. And then also the worry that it could impact my future career prospects were all things that played into not speaking about it very much, except to my nearest and dearest. But then I found, when I did start blogging and sharing my own experiences, that it was helpful to people. And that didn't really occur to me, that people would want to know about my experiences because it might help them through their own. And so that started to fuel my advocacy work and the things that I've done since then. And then, of course, the healthcare landscape in the United States has changed so much, so, thankfully, since I was diagnosed, and that has happened as well.
Now, there's one thing that you mentioned in the beginning that I'd like to touch on too, because you were then had surgery at the age of 26, you said, and you received a J pouch. Now, perhaps you can just explain to our listeners what that actually entailed.
Sure, I will do my best. Sometimes it's easier with like a visual aid, but I'll do my best to explain it. So, with ulcerative colitis in particular, a J pouch surgery isn't usually done for Crohn's disease, although it can be. Ulcerative colitis affects mainly the colon, the large bowel. So one treatment option is to have a colectomy and to remove the large bowel. And some people will then have an ileostomy placed, or some people will have a J pouch. And I decided to go with the J pouch. And so what it is that I had the colectomy, and then most of my rectum was also removed, although I have a little bit left. And then what they do is that they take your terminal ileum, so it's the last part of your small intestine, and they kind of fold it back on itself, and that makes the J shape. And then at the bottom of that J, that's opened up, and it's attached to your, in my case, to my rectum. Some people, they might remove the entire rectum and then it would be attached to the anus. And so what that means is that I'm, you know, going to the bathroom out of my bottom and not through a stoma. And it is, I'm not sure exactly how old the surgery is, but when I was diagnosed in, it was in use when I was diagnosed in 1989. I was sick enough then that surgery was on the table. We did manage to sort of, you know, calm that inflammation enough to where we didn't do it at that time. So I was able to wait 10 years before I had that happen. And I had mine done in two steps. So it's not done usually all at once. I had two steps. The first step was colectomy, and then they create the J pouch. And that's a pretty big surgery. And then the second, and I, so I did have an ileostomy for 3 months. So everything heals, and then they reverse the ileostomy. And then some people also have a three-step, which is they do the colectomy, you have an ileostomy, and then they create the J pouch, and you still have an ileostomy. And then the last step would be that they reverse the stoma, and then you're, you know, using the bathroom out of your bottom again. So in a nutshell, that's, I think that's the best way that I can explain it without, like I said, without drawing a picture.
Yeah, no, it's perfectly explained and it makes absolute sense. But I had no idea when I started with my radio show about the actual, well, the diversity in these operations and surgeries in chronic illness. And I think it's absolutely marvelous what they can do nowadays.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about surgery sort of like in these absolutes. You have an ileostomy, you have a J pouch, you have whatever, you know, colostomy. But there's also like in between things. So some surgeons are able to sort of personalize things a little more. And in Crohn's disease, they don't normally do a J pouch, although maybe sometimes, because Crohn's disease can also affect your small bowel. So if you do end up, if you already have Crohn's in your terminal ileum, or it comes back and affects that area, that then is your J pouch. And then you could potentially lose your J pouch. And then that would mean more surgery. So that's the reason why it's generally done for ulcerative colitis, because ulcerative colitis, and again, nothing is absolute, but in general, for most people that are diagnosed with it, it only affects your large bowel.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as I understood, you've had this for an incredibly long time. Have you had surgery since then, or has that, was that it once you've had it done?
Thankfully, so far, that was it. Yeah, yeah, I had that surgery in 1999. So what does that make it now? Almost 20,
25
years? 26 years. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's been literally this year. I've lived half my life with a J pouch and I have not needed more surgery on my digestive system. I'll put it that way. Although it's not off the table completely. Yeah. It's not off the table completely because IBD does tend to come back. The inflammation does tend to come back, and it did so in my case as well. But so far, I haven't needed any more surgery.
Excellent. Now, in my introduction, I spoke about, well, the flare-ups that can be very, very, very challenging. And do you have any tips for people that are going through this, what they can actually do if they do have a flare-up?
Yeah, I think one of the first things is to recognize that you're having it, because IBD can be very insidious. And what I mean by that is that you tend to think of it as, okay, you're having diarrhea or bloody diarrhea or pain, those types of symptoms that you're having in your digestive system. But before before people get to that point, they may have extra intestinal things. So more fatigued, maybe they're having sleep disturbances, they could be having mouth ulcers. Everybody's different, but there are a lot of things that can start to crop up, and people will want to recognize that that could be the beginning of an IBD flare-up. And when that kind of stuff is happening, Hopefully you're already under care
Yeah.
from hopefully a gastroenterologist who can then start to investigate and look into it and see what's happening. Because another thing that has changed so much since I was diagnosed is that we have these tests now that can monitor things like fecal calprotectin. So you go in and you give a stool sample and they can measure the amount of calprotectin in your stool, and that might indicate if it's high, that something is going on. They can do some blood tests and see what's going on there, see if you have a high white blood cell count, things like that. So hopefully, every year or every 6 months, you're seeing somebody. And so if something does crop up, it's caught early.
Early.
And once you do know what's going on, then you need to look around and say, okay, is what we're doing working? And do we need to make a change? And I think sometimes people think that making a change would mean changing everything, changing their diet, changing their medication, changing everything. And that might not be it. It could mean adding a medication for a little while. It could mean changing your medication completely. But you have to work with your team to try to understand what's, first of all, what's going on, where it's happening, where the inflammation is, or what the problem is. Because then they can, with shared decision making with your team, you can decide on what to do next. Because not every, we have so many treatments now. I think it can be confusing for patients. I think also sometimes for clinicians as well, to choose what treatment to try next or to go with next. But there are guidelines and there are certain treatments that might work better for certain types of the disease, because not IBD is not a monolith. Even within the two buckets of Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, there's differences. And then I think after you start on that path to get things treated medically, then you need to start looking into the rest of it. Then you, and I say the rest of it when it is a huge, huge amount of stuff, looking into your stress, your mental health, your eating plan, and trying to get those things so that they align with overall health. And that if you've been skipping sleep, maybe it's time to think about changing that and getting better sleep hygiene. And then lastly, I think one of the things that is really hard to do, but I think it helps in the long run, is to talk to your community. And this is like your non-IBD community. So people you work with, your family, your friends, and just in my case, like, the parent community, enlisting people's help and letting them know that something is going on with you and that you could use a little help while you're getting it under control. And you will, but for now, maybe you need to change the way that you're doing things, or you may need help with certain tasks while you're getting it all under control. And this is like this is like, to me, like bare, like absolutely simplified. Like there's so much more to it than that. But that's definitely, if I have a few minutes, these are the things that I would tell people with IBD when they find when they find a flare up is starting or has already really taken hold.
Yeah. I found it extremely interesting when you said your team, the people that care for you, that are in your team. I mean, ever since COVID, we talk about our bubble, but
Yes.
the people that are close and dear to you, and also your community. And what I found is it's important to talk about it, because only once you talk about something can you actually receive the help that you need. And it's also okay to ask for help, which I think is so vital, because often we feel overwhelmed and think we have to manage by ourselves, but we can ask for help. It's okay to say, listen, I'm going through something, and people generally do understand. And if it's your tribe, your crowd, your bubble, they will be well briefed and they will have your back.
Absolutely. And people want to help. I mean, if I have a friend, or say it's a parent at school who's going through something, I would want to know. I mean, nobody owes me an explanation about anything, of course. They can simply say I can't do that right now, and that's the end of it. But at the same time, I would hope that nobody is coping with something really difficult in silence and feeling as though that they cannot reach out for help because either people won't understand or won't help them. And what I am finding, obviously, you know, online and in public spaces, but also, you know, in more personal spaces, is that once you do start to let people in a little bit and let them know what's going on with you, they can relate because everybody's got something.
Exactly.
And then not only that, but almost everyone that I talk to, and I don't usually run into people who live with an IBD like in the wild, mm-hmm. with, you know, just like in my daily life. And I have never run into somebody with a J pouch outside of like patient meetups and medical meetings and stuff like that. But almost always they'll say, oh my gosh, I have a friend that lives with one of those diseases or a family member. And that immediately can create a connection. And then they can better understand you. And then they can also better understand what's going on with that other person in their life. And you just never know how these connections are going to play out. And, you know, for me, like, if, you know, if you come to eat dinner at my house, I don't know, we may talk about this kind of stuff at dinner. You know, I have to be reminded sometimes that not everybody wants to talk about bowel disease all the time. So, you know, sometimes I tell people, if, you know, if you need me to stop, just, you know, say so. You know, I want it out there. I want it open. This is how we deal with stigma. And this is how we also receive help and how we care for one another in all of these communities that we're in, because we're all in a bunch of different communities, even if we don't necessarily recognize it as such. But the more that we can let people know, ask for help, and tell them that it's okay to ask questions and discuss it with us, the more we are taking it back and removing that stigma.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very well said. Now, I've got a short commercial break, but we'll be back shortly because I want to talk about parenting and chronic illness.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am joined by Amber Tresca, and we have been discussing IBD in depth. And before we closed, you touched on a vital point about communication and speaking openly about your condition. I know not everybody is comfortable, but you do have your crowd, your set of confidence, your people that will have your back should you have a flare up and should you not feel well enough. But what I also heard out of that is, you know, you've got to advocate for yourself. You've got to also know your symptoms, know what your body, what's going on in your body. Because I know a lot of people, they just, they get a diagnosis and then they think, okay, it's the doctor's business. But no, it's actually your own business. You're the one living with a condition. And now I'm very curious to know, because I know you're a mom of two. And you've had a chronic illness, or well, most of your life. So, mm-hmm. how does that work?
that's because, a really good question.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I think it works well for the mm-hmm. most part. I had both of my kids after I had J pouch mm-hmm. surgery.
That's exactly what I'm actually on about, because I think. I've had multiple women on the show. They mm-hmm. had their babies after being diagnosed, and we've yeah. had various answers. So I'm very curious about your answer.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, thankfully so much has gone well for me. It doesn't go as well for everyone with the J pouch. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, you know, put on my patient education hat again for a moment to say that women who live with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease or other forms of IBD are sometimes told that their fertility might not be the same as it is for healthy women. But it usually is, actually. If you're in a flare-up, if you have inflammation going on, there might be some challenges with fertility. But for the most part, it's pretty well understood at this point, I think, that women with IBD don't have any reason to think that they can't get pregnant, same as anybody else. But with a J pouch, not with ileostomy so much, but specifically with a J pouch, because the surgery is so extensive and deep in your pelvis, there is the potential for scar tissue. And if the scar tissue tends blocks a fallopian tube or both fallopian tubes, that can present a problem with fertility. It's got nothing to do with being able to carry a baby to term. It just has to do with the fact that that egg can't travel down the highway, and that might be the problem. So I think sometimes people talk about it in very broad terms. Oh, your fertility might be affected. But I think it's really helpful to know specifically why. In my case, there's a little test that they do, little test. It's kind of a big test, where they look at your fallopian tubes, and mine were great. My surgeon actually managed that quite well, I guess. So everything was fine, and I was able to, get pregnant, carry to term twice, and my kids are now 14 and 17, and they are amazing, incredibly smart. Something that I was asked recently was about dealing with fatigue, for instance, with parenting. And I think maybe that might be a lot of people's biggest concern when they live with a chronic illness is how am I going to care for a child when I have to do so much to care for myself? And it is true, you do have to manage that. But again, that's where your community comes in. So that's where you're letting people know what's going on with you. And you're receiving help, as I have many times in my parenting journey. But my kids, because they're aware of most things that I've been through, they are still, teenagers, so we don't tell them everything. But I think that it has helped them to be more empathic and more understanding. And that they are incredibly helpful, not only for me, but also for just their friends and just socially, and that they may recognize when somebody is dealing with something that's more difficult, and they may be ready to help out because they've learned that growing up with a parent who lives with a chronic illness. And that's not to say that I'm, really struggling all the time. I'm not. I do pretty well. I have my issues, but most of the time I do pretty well. And I don't hide any of that from them, so they know what's going on. I think that's important as well. And I think it also helps with them with not making them afraid, with that not making them afraid of that something's going to happen to me, and that I won't be able to care for them or care for myself or something like that. So we're just very open about things in my house, and that's kind of how I've dealt with parenting and kind of my parenting philosophy.
And I mean, you said it as well. It actually also makes for a more empathic approach on their part because of their mom going through it, seeing how she deals with it, and going through life with open eyes and being able to recognize when somebody might need it. Absolutely love what you've said on those on that topic. Now, obviously, well, if I'm listening to your story now, obviously your whole career path was also changed because of IBD, because you started writing for the IBD community, as far as I understood. And now you're also doing your podcast. Can you perhaps just share where people can get hold of you and listen to your podcast as well?
Absolutely. I run a blog at aboutibd.com. And so that's kind of my main, that's where I put everything. So you can find everything there. But my podcast is hopefully available in almost any podcast app that you can think of. There are so many and they come and go. I try to stay on top of it. So you can search for About IBD and find me there. I'm also on, gosh, it's so hard to keep track now. There's so many social media platforms, but you know, the Instagram, the Facebook, the Twitter X, the Blue Sky, the Threads. I'm in those places, and you can find me there as About IBD as well. And of course, I do use my name on everything. So you can also search for Amber Truska, and I think I might be the only one. I don't know that there's any other Amber Truskas. So you can find me there as well. And, you know, I'm always looking to connect with the community. I'm always, you know, as a journalist, I'm always looking for the next story. And I'm also very interested in raising the voices of people who live with IBD. And one of the things I love about my podcast is not only that it's a great one-on-one conversation, and that really, you know, just absolutely, you know, fuels me, but also that you can hear people tell their story with their own words, with their own, in their own voice, and there's no mistaking that. It doesn't get changed or modified in any way, and you're hearing directly from them. And that's one of the things I love so much about doing my show.
Yeah. And you know, for me, it was, I didn't know I actually needed it, but when I started out, I actually thought I'd managed everything pretty well, but actually it helped me to even heal further on my yes. journey, because through interviewing so many people, it, I don't know, it just helped me as well. I didn't know I still needed healing, but it's helped me tremendously as well. So I can really attest to what you've said. It's marvelous. And I mean, that's why I started this radio show and podcast, to inform. And I think once people are really so, we always warn, don't go and look at Dr. Google.
Yeah.
But this is specific. We are handling specific topics, and it's best to hear from somebody who's gone through it. Like you said, it's an authentic story. It's the person themselves sharing their journey.
Agree 100%. And every single person that I interview for my show has taught me something.
Yeah.
And even sometimes, you know, I have, you know, close friends going back years in the IBD community that we've, you know, we've worked together and we're friendly and talk all the time. Even when I ask them to come on my show and tell their story, there's always something that I didn't know that they tell me about and that I learn from. And whenever I feel a little, and I don't know if you feel this from time to time, but whenever I feel like, gosh, this is hard for whatever reason, it's hard, you know, you're struggling through whatever's going on. And then also you're putting out this show. There's always someone like I say, the universe hears me. The universe hears me, and someone will come to me and say, thank you so much for putting out whatever episode that they've engaged with. It taught me XYZ, or I learned that I'm not alone, whatever it was. And they'll reach out to me and tell me that. And then I say, okay, all right, time to, all right, let's line up the next guest. Let's keep it moving.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I mean, that's just, it's such a good feeling. And it's so important, because I mean, when I was diagnosed, I had 6 days to get my head around, first of all, bowel cancer, and then life in an ostomy. I had no idea what was waiting for me. I'd never even heard of the word stoma before when it was used. Then a week later, here I'm lying in hospital. And and I the other day, somebody actually said, so they said, I am so glad you've done this, because I had no idea what was waiting, and you've explained it. And I think that's, then I've done my job correctly. If it's just one person that has learned from what I've gone through, or like you, what you've gone through, or the people that I've invited, then my job's done. You know, that's my aim.
Absolutely. And there's no better, it feels a little selfish. You know, I always say, like, doing my podcast is kind of a little selfish, because it fuels me. And then, you know, hopefully it gives other people information, and then also hope. You know, I'm very big on that, about providing people with hope, which your show does as well. I'm a fan. I'm a listener. And gosh, some of the stories, so incredible and so amazing. And people are just, dealing with things and being so open and honest. And it's just incredible to hear people's voices. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're almost at the end of the show, but I always like to reflect. Perhaps you can reflect on your journey. What would you tell somebody that's on the brink of either having surgery, having to have surgery, or not sure if they've actually got a chronic illness? Because sometimes these things take time to actually get diagnosed. What would be your top advice on how they would go about it? First of all, obviously the surgery. So it's actually two questions, the surgery, or actually knowing if they have a chronic illness or not.
Yeah. And that's a big thing, because sometimes it can take people a long time to get diagnosed with a form of IBD. For myself, it went pretty quick. I think because I was really ill and it was pretty clear what was going on, but it can take years for some people. And it's a hard thing to say, but it's like, you really just have to keep pushing. You have to pull your community, pull your people around you, find strength wherever you can, and then keep pushing for that diagnosis and keep asking questions. And if you're working with someone who is a healthcare provider that they don't like being questioned, then maybe that's not the person for you, and you need to try to move on to somebody else. And these things are hard. I don't want to say it's like, oh, well, just find another doctor, you know, because there are people that live in areas of the country where there's only one, you know, and you really don't have much in the way of choice. But recognizing that it is difficult, you still need to do it and keep pushing, and making sure also that your healthcare providers are speaking to one another so that everybody's aware, and then, you know, you can get it all figured out. With IBD specifically, if you think that you have an IBD, colonoscopy is usually the way that it goes. There might be a lot of other tests in there as well, but for the most part, people usually do get some kind of endoscopy in maybe more than one form in order to get a proper diagnosis. And then whether or not you need surgery, I mean, that's a whole, like in my case, it was very clear. The last colonoscopy that I had, they found precancerous changes. And that can happen in people with IBD, especially after you've had inflammation for a long time, which I did. I had this going on for like 10 years. So it was not a huge surprise that then I was, the cells were looking like they had precancerous changes, and then like my colon had to come out. Like it was pretty clear. It's a little more difficult for people who are not really sure what to do, maybe whether or not they should have a resection with Crohn's disease and maybe just take out that little part of bowel that, or maybe a big part of bowel that is giving them all of the trouble. But I will say this, I've had a lot of people on my show who have described their journeys, just about almost everything you can think of in regards to IBD. There's not been one person that has said, wow, I never should have had that surgery. My life is so much worse now that I had it. Because usually you get that piece of bowel taken out, or you have a colectomy and now you're living with an ileostomy, your life is so much better.
Because
the inflammation is gone. Maybe you have fewer medications. Maybe you have fewer supplements. Maybe you have more energy, things like that. So it can be hard to know what to do. I myself got three opinions before I got my surgery. So I would recommend that. But from the mental aspect, just remember that for most people, there's a better life on the other side of surgery and living with fewer problems with their IBD.
Yeah. But I can attest to that, because all those guests that I have had on that have suffered from a chronic illness have said exactly that as well. A lot of them were hesitant because they could not imagine their life with a pouch, with a ostomy. And all of them said that their life is so much better, and that they actually should have done it much earlier. But, you know, it's sometimes it's vanity that keeps you from doing it. If it should be a stoma and an ostomy, But for all of them, they've said exactly what you've just said. Their life is so much better afterwards.
And it doesn't, women have babies, men become parents as well after surgery. I've interviewed everyone from teachers to an Air Force pilot. So there's really, whatever you want to do with your life, you're going to be able to do it with a stoma, same as without.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much, Amber, for sharing so much for the IBD community, for everything you do for the community. It is so appreciated. I wish you all the best going forward and take care.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
All the best. Bye for now.